Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Heidi Boghossian, who is Executive Director of the National Lawyers Guild. She co-hosts the weekly civil liberties radio program Law and Disorder, which airs on Pacifica's WBAI in New York and on more than 50 national stations around the country. Her new book, just out, is Spying on Democracy, Government Surveillance, Corporate Power, and Public Resistance. Welcome to Background Briefing, Heidi Boghossian.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
And there was quite an extraordinary vote last night in the House. 217-205, a narrow majority shut down an amendment by Representative Justin Amash of Republican of Michigan, a Libertarian, and John Conyers, a storied progressive Democrat from Michigan. They wanted to curb the government surveillance or the NSA surveillance program under Section 215 of the Patriot Act. So the subtitle of your book talks about public resistance. Are the Congress people responding to the polls that indicate that a majority of people in this country see Snowden not as a traitor but as a whistleblower, and a majority in a very short period of time has switched from feeling that the government's not doing enough in terms of anti-terrorism surveillance to a recent majority that indicates the government is going too far?
Indeed, it would seem so, especially when you look at the closeness of the vote, how it stands in stark contrast to the vote just 2 years ago to reauthorize the Patriot Act, which passed by 250-153. So I think that the closeness of yesterday's vote is seen as a positive move that lawmakers and the public at large are concerned about the covert monitoring of Americans, as well as privacy and civil liberties implications that this surveillance has.
And what do you make of this strange coalition of conservative, often Tea Party Republicans, joining with progressive and liberal Democrats?
Clearly, Tea Party people don't want an overreaching government, and I think that this issue, government monitoring of individuals without probable cause, effectively doing what it was that the British did when we rebelled and created our Constitution in the 1700s, coming into people's homes with general warrants. We have the Fourth Amendment that guards against that. We don't want unreasonable searches and seizures by the government. So we're seeing, I think, remnants of the very thing that our country was founded to guard against. So I do think that brings people from both ends of the spectrum together.
And what do you make of the fact that on the other side, those that voted against the amendment and prevailed by a narrow margin, they were both the top leadership in the Republican House and the top minority leadership as well. So they were united as well.
So the Obama administration, pro-NSA members of Congress and the intelligence community lobbied very hard on the last few days before the vote to shoot down the amendment. And what they did was really equate a vote on behalf of the amendment with a vote for terrorism, the same kind of rhetoric that we've seen since 9/11 that says you can't really balance civil liberties with making our country more secure. So I think that certain people are invested in keeping this broad surveillance apparatus in place. You know, the amount of money that the U.S. government spends in contracting out to private business, something like 70% of our intelligence is outsourced. CEOs, quite frankly, wield enormous influence in shaping our national security policy. We have 30 presidentially appointed officials from Lockheed Martin, Verizon, Microsoft, who serve on the President's National Security Telecommunications Advisory Committee. So the partnership between government and big business is a very tight one.
And by the way, these big companies that get the metadata that was revealed by Edward Snowden, the PRISM program, which the Congress attempted to stop last night, at least some of the Congress did, they don't do this for patriotic reasons as much as they get paid.
Exactly. And I think what's happened with the so-called Snowden revelations is a lot of people who were unaware of how corporations are doing government business for them because he worked with Booz Hamilton. That's now coming out, and what people will, I think, be finding out is that there's virtually no oversight, that corporations operate often with impunity. The government interprets FISA and other laws in covert fashions that even members of Congress aren't privy to. That allows them to get away with things that have been hinted are quite unlawful. And when they get businesses to do their work for them, since businesses aren't accountable to the corporation, that's sort of a double way in which the government can skirt the law, get our private information, all doing it in the name of national security, but we don't know what they're going to do with this information down the road, how they may target people for political beliefs, how it can be misused. And as you mentioned, it's for profit.
And, of course, they're building that huge place in Utah to store all this information with, apparently with a view that at this point they haven't developed the algorithm sufficiently that they can predict the future, which probably they won't be able to do, but that's not going to stop them spending billions of dollars. But presumably they're storing all this data in the expectation that at some point or other they'll be able to use it retroactively. So they're building these vast data banks. Again, I'm speaking with Heidi Boghossian, who's Executive Director of the National Lawyers Guild. She co-hosts the weekly Civil Liberties radio program Law and Disorder, which airs on Pacificus WBAI in New York and on more than 50 national stations around the country. And her new book just out is Spying on Democracy, Government Surveillance, Corporate Power, and Public Resistance. Now, in terms of public resistance, it's pretty clear, as we mentioned from the recent Quinnipiac polls, that the public are upset about what's been revealed by Edward Snowden. The president did call for a national debate. It hasn't happened. His poll numbers have gone down, particularly with the key under 30 demographic, which has been key to his 2008 election. So there's a widespread annoyance, anger, I don't quite know how to describe it, in the country, or disquiet, I guess, because we simply don't know what the government knows, and that's the problem here. So how do we proceed in the 21st century with this 18th century Fourth Amendment that's been shredded? For example, a drone owned by your local police can go over your home, and so you'd be no longer secure in your home, your person, and your papers, as the Fourth Amendment states, if the drone has an infrared capability, for example. So when do you think this debate that the president is talking about, first of all, I don't think the playing field's level, is it, Heidi? Because the government knows a whole lot and we don't know what the government knows. So how do we know what they know, and how do we know how to protect ourselves if we don't know the extent to which our privacy has already been invaded?
Well, we can never know what they know because, especially under the Obama administration, so much information has been classified, and he's really cracked down on so-called leakers or whistleblowers who do bring programs forward to the public forum when they feel that they violate our law. So we have an increasingly punitive government that goes after journalists with subpoenas or with charges of espionage for not revealing confidential sources. I think what we have to do is rely on individuals on a daily basis to say, I don't want a certain intrusion. For example, the schoolgirl who refused to submit to a palm scan to get into a local cafeteria for her lunch. Her father sued, and there was also a municipality in California where people went to the city council and said, we don't want these new drones that the sheriff had just approved, I think. And they fought it, and they got rid of it. People have to assume that with the militarization of a lot of technology, such as drones or biometrics, being adapted for civilian use, that, as you say, they will be used to spy on people. I imagine that drones will be used to carry so-called less lethal weapons to hover above a protest, so that instead of shooting a rubber bullet at you directly, they will be shot at from above. So any time in your community you hear of something happening, I think that people need to harness their outrage, go to their local officials and say, we don't want this. And those stories, in turn, motivate others to sort of step up to the plate. And I think that's what happened with Snowden, is people had no idea of the extent of business and government surveillance, but really in every transaction through online transactions, use of iPhones and other personal data, it's very easy for businesses to collect our information, aggregate it, and then sell it to third parties. So you have to be, as a consumer, mindful when you use your credit card, when you sign up for a customer loyalty card, even when you register a refrigerator that you bought. Don't fill out the answers that say how many people in your household or other demographics. That really is just being used to market to you.
So, Heidi Boghossian, your book, Spying on Democracy, Government Surveillance, Corporate Power, and Public Resistance, gets into the nexus and these sweetheart deals between the government and a lot of these big private companies, particularly the Silicon Valley companies, the Googles and the Facebooks, etc. And I find it a strange disconnect here that the public seems to be outraged at the idea that the government is snooping on you and building dossiers on you and your behavior and all this metadata on who calls you when and for how long. But they don't seem to be particularly concerned about what private industry has on you. I mean, for example, if you email somebody and say, I like strawberry jam, the next day your inbox is full of ads for strawberry jam.
That's exactly right. And I think one of the things people need to be aware of is that this starts actually by targeting children, so that businesses like McDonald's and Coca-Cola, Walt Disney World, are trying to really inculcate in young people this kind of friendly loyalty to big corporations, so that you go to Disney World, you scan a bracelet, and it has all your personal information, and Cinderella greets you on your birthday. That should be very frightening to parents, and our laws aren't quite strong enough to protect young people and also adults, so a lot of public interest advocacy groups are trying to change that. Again, it's another way that people can start to be aware of how businesses target not only you but your families, and ways to limit the information that they can have access to. I think it starts with awareness, and once you are aware of that, you see really how pervasive it is in everything you do every hour of the day.
So a lot of people who are outraged by the Citizens United decision that's clearly changed our politics and opened the floodgates for unlimited money, and those with the most money in America now own the most of our politics. And it's a very simple transaction and a simple logic to it. So a lot of people in this country are trying to put forth a constitutional amendment to overturn it. And that's a very high bar, and it takes an awful lot of time. So as much as one admires the intention, it seems to be a bit like tilting at windmills. So you can't really change the Constitution or amend it to update it to the 21st century. So what can you do to make the Fourth Amendment more robust, since it's been whittled away at for decades, the First and the Fifth?
I think that first people need to realize surveillance of the level that we're seeing right now does not make us safer. That is a myth that is being put on us by corporations and the government to really install a wide-ranging apparatus that gathers all this information about us. The power historically to really make social change has always been in the hands of the people, in broad-based grassroots movements, in acts of singular courage that may be unpopular, that may be hard to take, but that really do remind people that if you don't use your First Amendment rights, if you don't take it to the streets or gather in a park or assemble with like-minded individuals to protest government and corporate policies that are wrong and often illegal, if you don't do that, you lose those First Amendment rights. You have to not let them get rusty. And I think that it sounds very simple, but we have to really reclaim democratic communities. We cannot be intimidated by the threat of terrorist charges being brought against people with unpopular views, for example. And I think that's largely what this surveillance state does. It frightens people into speaking out. And then we become nothing more than a society of Stepford wives, as it were. So really reclaiming old-fashioned one-on-one in-person communication. If you see something wrong, speak out. Write a letter to the editor. You know, fight the policy on behalf of your children. One example is laptops that kids were given in schools that had the ability to monitor them from, you know, distant locations. They were being spied on. When you find that out, you have to protest, bring your story to the public, and write to your legislators and say no. And you have to go to businesses, hit them in their pockets, and say, we don't want to do business with you anymore.
So what's your sense then of where this is heading, though, in terms of what you call for in the subtitle of your book, Spying on Democracy, Heidi Boghossian, Government Surveillance, Corporate Power, and Public Resistance? In terms of public resistance, it, of course, is driven by public knowledge and what knowledge the public get. And we've only gotten some knowledge recently because, due to a leak. On the other hand, we have this mechanism that oversees the intelligence community, the select committees in both the House and the Senate. And you have this strange situation with some of the better senators like Ron Wyden, who's on the intelligence committee, and they're constrained from telling the public what's going on, but they push the envelope as much as they can, from my understanding. He apparently, Wyden, hinted in a talk yesterday in Washington, there's a lot more of these secret programs that we don't know about. And we know about what the extraordinary situation that took place under George W. Bush with Ashcroft about to have an operation, and Andy Card and Gonzalez trying to get this semi-comatose man to extend a secret surveillance program that so outraged the head of the FBI and the acting Attorney General Comey, who's now Obama's pick to head up the FBI, threat to quit. And Bush didn't even know about it because Cheney kept it all from him. And then when Bush found out just before the election with that he was running against John Kerry, he realized that it would have been a disaster for his election, and they amended whatever this secret program has. So we only get these little glimpses of what's going on behind the scenes, and it's very hard to connect the dots. So what's your sense of other shoes that might drop?
Well, it's true that Ron Wyden hinted, as he has been doing, that the extent of this is not fully known. I believe that with the really secret kind of government that we're seeing, we've had to rely a lot on whistleblowers or really courageous journalists who break stories about these programs to get them to the public. I imagine that there will be more Snowden revelations. Perhaps there will be others who come forward. What we have to hope for is that this continues, really, the changing of public opinion to realize that we cannot blindly trust our elected officials, so that when we have a few brave ones like Mark Udall or Ron Wyden or even Justin Amash who speak out and try to remind us of the values this country was founded on, and then suggest that even though they may not know the full extent, there are things that if we knew we would be outraged about, we have to turn that into action. And I think it's heartening to see that Jim Sensenbrenner, one of the architects of the Patriot Act, is now saying that NSA has overstepped its bounds. And these things seem to gain momentum, as they have in the last month. And I'm hopeful that if people continue to take personal responsibility and say this is wrong, that elected officials will give in, and especially if we go to those businesses that gather our data and say this is wrong. And their hands are tied, too, under the guise of national security. Google and Facebook can't really share the extent to which they're turning over information. But there's got to be a sea change at a certain point where, as we saw during Watergate and the 60s, after COINTELPRO became public, the people spoke out, and government enacted restrictions on FBI spying on domestic individuals. We've lost those restrictions after 9/11. I think it's time for all of the fear-mongering tactics under the guise of preventing future terrorism acts and a perpetual war on terrorism, which is really a mantra to control the general populace, that's got to be reversed. And people have to realize that we need to go back to our constitutional protections.
Well, Heidi Boghossian, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Heidi Boghossian, who is the Executive Director of the National Lawyers Guild. She co-hosts the weekly civil liberties radio program Law and Disorder, which airs on Pacifica's WBAI in New York and on more than 50 national stations around the country. Her new book just out is Spying on Democracy, Government Surveillance, Corporate Power, and Public Resistance. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back looking into whether the too-big-to-jail phenomenon on Wall Street has ended.